Hello friends, I'm your host Chris Thrall. I'm a former Royal Marines Commando. I've adventured, for better and sometimes worse, across 80 countries on all 7 continents. Welcome to the Bought the T-Shirt podcast. George, how are you, my friend?
I'm very well, thank you very much, Chris. What about you?
Yes, not going to complain, put it that way.
That's good. Well, we can be better, so let's work towards that way.
Yes, definitely. And we should say thank you to Gareth. So Gareth, if you're watching this, thank you for putting George and I in touch. What I will say is it's not really George, but I'm going to keep tripping myself up, George, if I try to pronounce it in Romanian. And so George is okay, yeah?
Yeah, no problem. Yes, most of the people know me by this name. So it's similar with my name in Romanian, so don't make any difference.
Yeah. Well, one more time, though. Give it to me in Romanian.
Okay. In Romanian, you'll pronounce it Gheorghe.
Gheorghe.
Yes, spot on, Chris.
Gheorghe. Okay.
Gheorghe.
I'm not going to try and do that because
No.
I would trip myself up.
Well, we keep it simple. Simple things most of the time work.
Yes. Yes. I won't tell you what people call me, George.
Well.
especially my girlfriend.
Oh, that will be not good.
So, I'm all ears, as they say. I'm fascinated to learn more. All I really know about Krav Maga, I don't even know if I pronounce it right, is that it was the Israeli Special Forces technique of fighting. I will say I've trained with the Israeli Special Forces in Israel. That's another story again. So, George, let's go back to the beginning. Well, maybe you were in the military.
I've done my national service when I was 18 for 1 year. Actually, when I've been on my national service, the Ceausescu regime fall was in 1989. I've been for 4 years on the service. It was a good and bad experience. Then I moved on. So I came back and worked as a contractor for the army. I've been a sergeant in charge with physical training, shooting, and hand-to-hand combat. Done a lot of military martial arts competitions because also we were not allowed at that point to do any competitions on a civilian sector. So we just stick with the army. I left army in 2020. Then I moved away from home. I've been to Portugal. I've been doing some security jobs there. And then I moved to UK. So I start to work for P&O Ferries. And then I opened this academy that it's doing well, and it's quite well known.
Yes, I mean, George, I'm going to point out for our friends at home, George is one of the most respected Krav Maga instructors in the world. You can generally tell from somebody's humble outwardness that there's a lot going on inside, and in here, let's say that's the vibe I'm picking up, George.
Yeah, you are right. Our motto on this academy is our student safety. It's kind of our responsibility, because if we teach them well, and we have a lot of proofs coming back from some students that have been using the knowledge, not necessarily the fighting skills, because when we talk about self-defense, it's more about awareness, it's more about running away, body language, understand the situation. And only if you have to defend yourself, that's when the fighting skills are coming. I'll say maybe 5%, but at any cost, just avoid the physical contact because people get injured. You might know what how it's starting. We don't know how that ends. So,
can you tell that to my son, please?
So, Chris-san, make sure that you don't engage. How old is your son?
He's 6, and his favorite pastime is, can we say, abusing his daddy.
Well, that's like a game. Actually, you know, I mean, when I was your son's age, my father used to teach me how to defend myself, like how to fight. He was a wrestler, a few times a Romanian champion. So once, I think I was 5, I came home with a split lip, and my father asked me, "What's that?" Well, somebody punched me on the face. So you want to cry? No. So don't come and cry. You have to learn how to defend yourself. So he started to teach me how to punch, how to throw, how to this. And then that's how I start to kind of look after myself. It was nothing like running under the mother's skirt. Oh, somebody beat me up. I just went sort it out. Yeah. So yes. Fighting is that's how you learn. Look, animals, they fight when they are cubs or they... It's a play, so that's how you get better. So your son is doing a good job, and I'm sure you will teach him very well.
Yes, we put him into taekwondo.
Okay.
He's been doing that about 1 year now and gradually getting better. But the instructor is a former commando as well, and he just looked at my son and went, "Your daddy knows how to fight." Right? It's not really strictly true, but I know the basics, obviously, from the military and just having an interest. I did judo when I was about 14, 15, did judo for 1 year. And wow, just 1 year, which is so small, meant the skills I learned were, well.
I mean, talking about the time, if you pay attention in what you learning, I mean, if you are in 100% and you're there to, if you have a good drive or a very, very high motivation, you can learn in 1 year that other people cannot learn in entire life. That's very simple like that. I saw so many cases. And I mean, you also saw this on Army. Some people are very focused, very dedicated, and they go far. Other people who are, it's okay like that. No, you have to all the time pushing yourself, like being thirsty or hungry to learn more and more and more.
Yes. It was just amazing that they used to teach you the moves. I can't remember the names, but it's moves named things like Uchimata and this kind of thing. And whenever anyone tried to bully me at school, I used to let it go once and then I'd let it go twice and then maybe the third time, just bang. And before the person even realized what happened, you can just put them on their ass, you know, and then of course they don't try and bully you again. And that was the main, I don't know if it's one of the main reasons, but it was certainly a reason I wanted my son to start in the martial arts when he's young. Because I think if you become that person that gets bullied at school for whatever reason, it can really affect you as an adult. It can really affect your confidence. And I just wanted my son to know that, you know, just enough, not to be angry or aggressive, but to be able to look after himself.
It's also good for them at this age because they develop motor skills, awareness. I'm kind of still 8 years, that's more or less what they develop. And discipline, you increase the focus span because at this age they might be focused for 2-3 minutes. But now I'm talking about depends on the class structure. You put them to, for example, do a kick. And you'll see 2-3 minutes, they go a little bit kind of out of that span. Make them to do something else. So you switch focus from one particular task to a different task. But actually, without them knowing, you increase their focus. So you give them something that they are interested in. So that's kind of how we run our kids classes, and now we can do on our little ones even 10 minutes, 15 minutes sometimes, like combinations and flows, so they still focus, because what you do, you just want to increase that, which is good also when they go to school, because they can stay more focused on the lesson.
Yes.
So it's not affecting just their a sport life side. It's also the social life side.
Yes, life skills.
Yes.
George, I'm fascinated to hear, well, lots of things, really. I'd like to know more about Romania. I had friends used to go backpacking there every summer. They loved it. They would meet incredibly interesting people that own castles up in the mountains and stuff, and they'd get looked after, and it was quite incredible. But I also want to ask you about your military experience, because we don't have national service here, as I'm sure you know. Lots of people think we should, and of course
I agree.
Yeah, and of course there's always, you know, different arguments. For example, one of the funniest things I heard was a guy called Dave Radband, who was in the parachute regiment. He's a friend of mine, and Dave said, the problem with military service is half the people you don't want them to come and fight with you if they've been forced to join. But Romania, I learned fairly recently, it's one of the few, is it, five countries in the world that speaks a Latin language?
Yes. Now, I mean, it's Romania, it's Italy. English language have some trace of Latin. French, Portuguese, Spanish.
Spain.
And obviously, that's when you talk about the Spanish language, which is, it's broadening out to South America, perhaps a little bit of Cuban. So, because I used to live in Portugal and work there, so I speak also Portuguese. I mean, I can still understand a lot. I stopped speaking since 2006. But it's very interesting how when you speak, for example, Portuguese, you understand a lot of Spanish. It's very, very similar. So, yeah, it's a Latin language.
And when you think of the name Romania, Romania, then you understand the connection to Italy and
it's a lot of stories about our ancestors. We call Dacians. They've been blood related with the Romans. I'm talking about Julius Caesar and that times. You know how is the history. History is the way how somebody will write it down. So somebody will have one story, somebody will have a different story, and it depends on who is writing and what's serving for. So, but yes, it's a Latin language.
Mm.
Actually, we used to learn when I was, my time, we used to learn Latin in the school. As a part of the, subjects. When I was 13, 14, we used to learn Latin. It's a very, very, very difficult language. It's more difficult than Italian or Romanian. Have so many things. It's hard language.
Yes, lots of verbs and prepositions and yes.
Grammatically, it's just nightmare.
Yeah, we learn Latin at school. I don't know why, because one year is not long enough to learn any language, especially if you're not living in the place. I mean,
most of the time you learn Latin because it's related with religion, with church. They read all that books in Latin. So I think that's the reason.
Mm. And when in the UK, or maybe it's just myself, but when I think of Romania, we obviously think of the orphanages. Why is this phenomenon?
Well, when you think about Romanians, some people think also about the gypsies. So it's easy to associate somebody with something bad. You know what I mean? Like every country has their own, I would say, bad areas, their own problems. I don't know why. I mean, it's, as I mentioned, it's easy to see the bad things in different countries than see what's happened in our own country. It's not no one to be blamed. It's, I think, how the society been molded in and what the stream media is presenting the things. That makes sense.
Yes, and I should say sorry, George. I didn't mean
No,
to sound rude.
no, no, Chris, it's fine. I know it is what it is. So
I
it's a
just
good
want.
question.
Yeah, I just wondered if it was some cultural thing. Like, I've lived in China and Hong Kong, and over there, infanticide, I think they call it killing children, that was quite normal, and probably still is in a large part of China. And I didn't know if maybe it was some, something to do with being married and having children, or
To
you
be
know.
honest, like the family is the cell of the society in Romania, and the family is kind of very well connected as a lineage and everything. But we have orphanages, and I think it's because the government don't pay too much attention, and obviously in different countries they raise money and help where it needs. So perhaps some charities in England, they raise money, clothes, all sorts of to send to Romanian orphanages, and that's going on a social media, on the media, and okay, that's what we do. So that's associated with that subject, it's okay. Everyone needs help. There's nothing wrong to help people.
Yeah, we have huge, huge issues in this country. It's just that they're very, very cleverly dressed up to not look like problems, but
Well, if you want to divert the attention from the local problem or our own problem, show a different problem, show other countries' problem, because people are going to watch it. That makes sense. I mean, you put it very well on few of your podcasts, like about the media and what the media it's washing. So it's a good washing machine.
yes, I'm glad you see it.
Yeah, well, you have to be half blind to don't see it, and some people decide to don't see it because it's not on their interest, or they have a good life and it's not affecting their life now. But as soon as it's going to affect their families and life, they all, oh, okay, that's not good. So till you don't get it, yeah.
Yes, let's not talk about the
Yes.
let's just not. But it's really caused quite an issue doing podcasts with people because, like you say, we could say some people don't get it. I would say probably 99% of people don't get it. I'm fortunate to speak to more kind of enlightened people who understand what's going on, but it's so hard to have a chat with someone when they're coming out with stuff that is putting your child into slavery for the rest of their life. And when they're saying things like, oh, well, it's just so we can go on holiday, or oh, it's just that, life will be back to, it's like, oh my God, do you only ever think about yourself? Do you
The
not think
selfiness,
about the
exactly.
do you not think about the children, what you're doing? Oh, but it's not mandatory. Yes, it is mandatory. Try and get on an airplane, try if you're say a traveling salesman, you have to travel to different countries or this kind of thing, or an air steward, or this, you're going to have huge pressure on you to conform, to conform. That's all I'm saying, folks. I'm not going to say any more.
It's not mandatory, but there are some small roads that all go in the same place. So whatever way you travel, you'll be channeled toward that gate. Let's put it in this way.
Yes, massively, and I'm glad you see it. And it's all leading to the same, excuse me, it's all leading to the same place. And George, it's become, sorry, I know we're going slightly sideways, but this is so important people understand. Every time you go, oh yeah, but I only did it because of this, or then it's just you're either for this agenda and the enslavement of mankind, or you're against it. There isn't like a, there isn't, oh, I only didn't know it. It's and when I look my son in the eye, he has to know I did my best for him, everything that I could. So that's yes. So we were talking about flagging up problems and issues to hide other issues, weren't we? So what is the gypsy connection? When I was young, we were fascinated by gypsies because mainly it was in folklore, so stories that you heard when you were children, and you heard about these gypsy caravans pulled by a horse and this almost like wild-like people that would eat rabbits and hedgehogs and catch fish from the rivers and this kind of fascinating stuff. And then, of course, as time has gone on, we get more travel, what they call travelers, so proper caravans, cars, quite a lot of money, some of them. So yes, what, why is this such a strong connection with Romania, Romania?
So some Romanian travelers are coming to UK and they don't behave, so that's why we are associated sometimes with the travelers. But like we have, I mean, travelers are all over the world. I don't think a specific group of a specific ethnic group should represent a country. That makes sense. But
Yeah.
again, it's like something good to point out to look somewhere else.
Yeah, I didn't mean it negatively. I
No,
mean it.
I know. Yeah.
I mean I'm fascinated about the culture of the gypsies. Like, where did they come from? Who are they? What?
Well, we have a theory in Romania. They come from kind of India, that part of the country.
Yeah.
That's what been told. And it's a story that actually Ceausescu, he tried to send all the Romanian gypsies to India. I don't know why, but that was kind of a true story.
Yes, now you mention it, I'm remembering the connection to it to India. It's fascinating when you look at history like this and you see the peoples of the world and where they've all come from. What
They have their own language. So, for example, the gypsies, mostly in Europe, they understand each other. They have their own language. I'm not sure here in UK, but definitely, for example, I spoke with some of my students. So, for example, Bulgarian gypsies, they understand perfectly the Romanian gypsies. They have their own culture. They have their own costumes. So they're like an ethnic group, obviously. They are different than other groups. That's why we call it a diversity.
Yes. Romanian men, I've only met one woman that I know. Funny enough, I met her in the sauna at the gym. She was the one that said to, I said to her, where are you from? And she said, guess. I said, give me a clue. She said, we're one of the countries in the world that speaks a Latin language. You guys seem quite like well balanced. Quite knowledgeable, quite calm. Is this normal?
It used to be normal because I'll say the education till a certain point, it was very strong. I used to go to school Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday. And we used to learn about, for example, geography. We used to learn about all the countries in the world. Know the capital, the big cities, I mean the industry, population. Quite a lot of knowledge, and we used to learn about the history about almost every single country. So you see the difference on education now is not the same education. So I'll say my generation and perhaps another two generations after me, we had a different education, more broad. We didn't used to have like credit cards and I'll say a chance to borrow money with interest. So I used to kind of, if I have £10 for this month, I have to kind of make sure it's all put to a good use and I don't need to borrow. So a little bit more responsible on certain things. And also I think the national service is important, especially for male, because you get discipline. You get like an army. You wake up 6 o'clock or 5 o'clock on a normal time and you go to bed 10 o'clock. That's it. After 10 o'clock, just head under the pillow and no one talk. And you have a routine. So that's making you to be more disciplined, have a goal. You look to improve yourself. So I think this part of important for, it's important part for young male. Now we don't have a national service anymore in Romania. So that's why it start to watering out. Because you mentioned also some people think in UK should be mandatory. If you look at the other countries, Israel, I think Switzerland, everyone is going and doing their national service and go after 3 months for refresh and stuff like that. I think it's good for everyone. This is my opinion. It's just an opinion. It's not a suggestion. So, yeah.
Yes, and possibly have not a form of national service for people who maybe don't want to go and learn to kill, right? Maybe, I don't know, you work for the council or something.
Well, you can go in army, not necessarily. I mean, you learn to shoot. That doesn't mean you are going to kill somebody, but perhaps you'll use it to save your life. Because in army, you can be like on all sorts of, you can be a driver. You can be, have any other jobs, not necessarily have to be on the front line and go and do all sorts of activities. That makes sense. So, but yeah. the first 3 months when you got discipline, how to walk, how to march, how to, I don't know, fall, crawl, all sorts. I think that's important because it's part of, it's a physical education. It's a mental education. A lot of people kind of, when I was to train them, oh, I'm not going there. Yes, you go because I'm going first. So if I crawl to that mood, so I lead by example, you crawl with me. So if you cannot carry your weapon, I'll do it. So, oh, the sergeant is helping me. I have to do it. So you motivate them. It's your job. So if you have a good instructor, you can motivate people. And we as a human, we can do so much things if you are strong here. So it doesn't matter how big you are, mentally you have to be strong.
I think what would be good, and I have this conversation a lot because a lot of people write to me and say, Chris, I nearly joined the Marines or I wish I was. And I say, dude, you live your life. Don't just be happy. The past is the past. You shouldn't live your whole life thinking, I wish I'd done this. It's unhealthy. But having said that, it would be good to have some sort of academy. I'm thinking young men, but it doesn't have to be limited to men, but where young guys could go and they could be tested and they could learn the skills and they could learn how to look after one another and all the sort of good qualities that I think what I would call warrior qualities. And by warrior, I don't mean fighting. But of course, if you do that under national service, then you have to work for you know who, don't you? For the people that don't really care very much about you.
Yeah, well, national service it used to be 1 year, but again, after the national service, you went back on a civilian life, and but you have some discipline, you have some you gain some skills. I mean, most of us, you know, I mean, not 100% of people. Well, I think that will be good for society because, you know, when you are a bunch of guys there all the time, you eat together, you go together, do things together, you learn how to live with other people who have a different opinion, different needs. So it make it a little bit more flexible, more to see the things from not just from your point of view, from different point of view, which will be also good for society. I mean, so you learn not to be selfish, because if you see your friend struggle, you help him. I think that'll be kind of a good benefit to society.
Yes, yes. I want to ask you, George, I mean, you spent a few years in the army. So when you did your national service, did you just decide to stay in the army? Is that how it worked?
Well, I had a 1 year gap between when I finished and when I offered my services a paid soldier. I've done a different job between. I just wanted to kind of get a little bit more experience on different stuff, and then I said, okay, this is what I want to do. So I went to the next unit, which was about maybe 15 minutes on a walking distance from where I used to live. And I've done my test. So I passed it. So I become to be like, we call it a pay soldier.
Did you see any action as a soldier?
We've done a lot of exercises. I mean, NATO is still using some of the, I'll say, the big fields there in Romania. Never been on a real life. I tried to go when the Kosovo start, but my boss didn't let me to go. So I was a little bit kind of upset about that. So that kind of went with me for good years, which led to me leaving the army, because then I've never been allowed to go on any kind of this stuff. Perhaps it's a good thing, because we are talking now. We don't know what's happened there. The reason they said you cannot go, because we need to hear to instruct people, it wasn't my call on that decision. But I'm still a very good relationship with every one of my ex-commanders, which is talk, we'll talk from time to time when I'm going home. I'm going to see them, so still there.
Good. And George, you've done several years in close protection.
Yes, I've done it when I was in army. So, you know, when generals come across, they need to look after them, especially when they go and drink and eat. So you have to look after them. I've done a lot of in Portugal. I've done a few jobs in UK, but close protection, most of the, like UK close protection, is more like an unarmed security officer. So you still have to rely on your hand-to-hand combat. And obviously you have to look after somebody, which is not, it's okay. I'll not do it again. It's not healthy, let's put it in this way. It's a lot of stress, and some clients treat you like they own you. And I don't like that.
Yes, I was chatting to a bodyguard, Den Champ, on our live show on Friday, I think it was. And he said I think he was being generous. He said it's 1 hour action in the day, and then it's 7 hours shopping or babysitting or. So, yes, it's a little bit when you end up spending your life doing that kind of shift work, and it's quite. You're just doing it to earn the money. I think you have to make a decision then.
We had a client somewhere here in UK, I'm not saying place and everything, very, very wealthy. He had some problem. He called, okay, can you arrange this? Yes. So I went down there to see what's all about. I assessed the situation, cameras, because it was about where he'd been working. Went to see the home, see if we can create a panic room, what can be done, everything, all that, you know, like by the book. So said, I'm not taking the job because this, but I can suggest somebody. So we put a guy there, very knowledgeable. Everything was okay for about 2-3 days. I got a phone call from my guy. George, well, something is going on here. What's going on? Well, he don't want to listen to me. He just said, well, I'm paying you. You stay here, do what I'm telling you. So I got the phone. What are you doing, man? He's supposed to look after you. Yeah, but I'm paying him. Well, you're paying him to look after you. Whatever way you go, he's going. You have to listen to him. Yeah, didn't last long. So we pull out, said, no, our name is not there. You do whatever you want. No problem.
Did you have any dangerous moments?
Well, I used to work a lot on the doors, especially in Portugal. And if you see the dangerous moments before happen, you can avoid them. I used to do doors on my own, like a ground floor and level one of that club. Always stay on the middle of the stairs, so see up and down for a good money. But when I saw somebody trying to be cocky, trying to annoy people, just take him out. Don't let it to escalate. You have to stay on the ball. A funny one. I mean, I used to like to fight for reasons, for no reasons, as a young male, not anymore because it's dangerous. So had a very kind of interesting story where the awareness pay every single penny. I've been on a Halfords buying some windscreen wipers. I didn't find the right ones. I called the guy who worked there. In the meantime, a group of five guys very loudly came in. They split in two. And while I was, we've been looking for the stuff that I needed, two guys passed behind me. So I used to have like a small bag across of my body. So when he passed, you see, instinct. I just bring it to the front, that catch attention. So the guy passed. Stop on in the end of the aisle and look at me. I didn't look at him, but I saw him. So at that point, I was very, very aware. They left. So they all joined together, got out and start to work very slow, but I was still watching them. So I went to the till and I was thinking, okay, I can do this home. I mean, to change the wipers or I can pay £3, I think it was £3.50 or something. The guy can change the wipers. So, okay, I'll pay for it. As soon as we get out of the Halfords, they start to kind of turn around and I saw it. So I took my car key. So one of them now start to come back towards my car. The guy even didn't notice, he'd been busy with the wipers. So I unlocked the car, opened the door, get my bag, throw it on a car, close the door, lock the door, put the keys on the pocket. Now I was watching him. And I took a pen, and I look at the pen, I look at him, put it on my pocket. And I was looking at him. You know what's happened? That was a message. I'm aware. I'm here. That's it. They all join together, jump in the car, off you go. So, again, self-defense about be aware. That's very simple like that.
Yeah.
Dangerous problem, dangerous situations. I mean, if you don't know you are interviewed by a very dangerous person, you'll treat that person as an equal. Because if you know that guy, it's a criminal and kill somebody, you'll be like, I know this guy is dangerous. So you perhaps will, a lot of people will be very, very intimidated. So I used to live on a neighborhood with a lot of gypsies, and some of them like a clan's families, very well known for violence, being in the jail, beating police officers up, all sorts of. And there was a family, 13 brothers, all boys, all in a prison. So I knew most of them. With some of them, I used to talk. One of the brothers came out and I didn't know. So I was going to my training. So it was a block of apartments. So one of the gypsies came out and asked me for a cig. Said, I'm not smoking. Give me a cig, I said. Well, I said, I don't smoke. So the guy was, well, do you know who I am? I said, no. Do you know who I am? No. I said, do you want to know? And the guy started to laugh, saying, listen to this one. So now more friends coming out from the, I said, oh, something is going on there. So I have to hit first, because that's my only chance, and then run like a Usain Bolt. So the guys came very aggressive. And this guy said, no, I'm talking with him. So I said, okay, you have some dignity there and we'll do it one-to-one like old times. And he said, you really don't know who I am. I said, no. So he said, I'm Balint. I said, I'm George. The name rings straight away. So the guy said, I like you. I like you have a... And from now on, if anyone has a problem with you, tell them that you are my friend. I said, well, so have you as a friend and I have your brother as a friend. Ah, so you're my brother, yes. And I have that one as a friend. So I'm one of the luckiest guy. Yes, you are. So we shake hands. That's it. So I think when you don't know what you go in, but you go with attitude, can sort some issues out there. That was very, very, very dangerous because would end up on very, very ugly. The most dangerous one, it was when I stand up for my brother. So again, with the gypsies, one of the guys been eating his pack lunch. All the time, my brother coming home and just crying, and this guy pushing me and bullying me, and okay, no worries. So I was kind of watching him. So when he came home, just went out of my house and beat him up very, very bad. So I punch him on the face, clenched fist, I catch him on the front teeth. I had a scar here. I've been pierced by one of his teeth. And I was celebrating for maybe 4 minutes. Chris, you know, when you hear like a riot, a lot of voices and more and more and more intense. So he came with the family, with cousins, with I don't know who the heck it was. I think around 30 people to our door. We used to have an apartment at the ground floor. And I was so scared. I was about 13 at that point. I was scared, honest to God. My mom was in the kitchen cooking. So the guy's been banging on the door and all that sort. So my mom opened the door. She was with a kitchen knife on hand. And, oh, we'll go and kill me. If you want to kill him, you kill me first, but I'll kill one of you guys. So it was kind of a standoff there. Now, opposite our apartment, lives one of the famous gypsy family in the neighborhood. So the guy came out and started to speak on their language, and they all left. So we've been kind of very good relationship with them. So that was kind of one of the scariest things because they've been trying now to force him to get in an apartment. It was scary.
Wow.
But again, my mom saved my ass at that point. So putting it that way.
Yes. There's a certain limit where things just become quite frightening.
And, you know, I relate this with ladies who say, I can't hurt anybody. I cannot kill things. Everyone can kill. We are animals. You just need the right reason and you'll do it. Especially as a parent, that's a very strong reason when your offspring is there in danger. And my mom proved it because she was a very peaceful lady, never want to hurt somebody or speak bad about somebody. And that's in the back of my head when I'm reading books and go to conferences. People say, no, I can't do this. Yes, you can. With a little bit of training, yes, you can.
Yes. George, I want to just go back and ask you about Ceausescu. He was executed, wasn't he?
Yep. And a lot of, I said, people being very happy about that. But that was, for me, was not the right thing to do. They killed him because they knew it. If they don't get rid of him, everything what they've been plotting will be reversed. That's my true opinion.
Oh, you think by getting rid of him, it would make the situation worse?
So let's put it this way. In 1989, Romania have zero debt, paid everything, nothing to pay. And they had a lot of... I mean, Romania still have a lot of money to collect from Iran, Iraq, that countries. I think it was a plot, most of the people know, and people who been after him in charge sold our country. So it's another country who is owned by other people. That's my opinion. It's nothing to do with the politics. I can express my opinion. So he's done a lot of good for people. For example, you got married, you got a chance to get a house. No one was being allowed to stay on the streets without the work. Didn't have a job, they will find you one. And we couldn't travel abroad. Not a big deal. We couldn't have certain things. It's not a big deal. Other countries been, you know, starving whenever. So, and as I mentioned, he looked after the people. But that's my point of view. So other people think it was a dictator.
Did when under his rule, did you have the central bank system?
Yeah, it was the Bank of Romania, yeah.
But was that tied into the Rothschilds and the...
Not at that point.
No.
No, not at that point. And you could get money from the bank with zero interest to get your house if you wanted.
Yes.
Or even, or for example, some people got a house and they used to pay like a monthly to their house without getting anything from the bank. Just get the keys and a contract, that's it. That was a very good system. Well, what's happened. Yeah.
It's a great system, George, and it's the way it should be. And it's, if you don't understand the money system, folks, very important to understand the money system. When you understand the money system, then you understand what's going on in the wider world. But it's lending money at interest is referred to in biblical terms, so in the scriptures, as usury, and it was forbidden throughout most many lands, if not all at one point, because people could see if you started to let people control the money system and charge interest, then they have carte blanche to just enslave everybody. And that's we're starting to, this is what we're seeing now. This is the bigger picture of what is going on. And again, it ties in with people going, I've got to travel because I do this. It's yes, because this system of control is it's so strong.
Well, you have money, you have power. That's all about.
Yes.
Money buys almost everything these days.
Let's get on to the martial arts then, George, because I'm sure a lot of people are watching this dying to hear. Did you do Krav Maga in the military?
No, actually, I started Krav Maga in 2002. In the military, I used to train them based on karate and jiu-jitsu principles. And for the military, it was more about how to use your rifle and your... I don't know how you call it on in English. The small to dig your own.
Is it either a bayonet? That's the knife.
No, not the bayonet. No. It's an
entrenching tool to dig the trench.
Yes, to dig the trench. So we had the foldable one. So how to use it? Because so at that point you used to have like a serrated. One of the sides for that tranchy tool, and very, very sharp, so you can use it as a fighting tool. So that's what we've been teaching based on that, hand-to-hand combat, how to defend against the knife, but nothing at the scale of Krav Maga. So it was based on, you attack me this way, and I'll block this way. Fight is dynamic, you don't expect. So the most of the, I want to say, problem for the martial arts world, you have solution for everything that is going on. So if you have 1,000 problems, you have 1,000 solutions. So if it's 1,001 problem arrive, you need to find a solution, which Krav Maga, what they've done, they simplified. You have something for more situations. These days, Krav Maga, it's a little bit... competitive with other styles. So if A Krav Maga have a spinning kick and B Krav Maga have to do the same because they want to be kind of level up, that makes sense. If Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu come with something new, Krav Maga will come and implement it. Even if it's against the principles, they still have it there because they want to be the best. And now if we go back on, I would say, simplicity, and what we can do under the real life stress, Not too many things, because fine motor skills are going when it's 110 beats per minute. Mixed motor skills, 145. Gross motor skills, like running, throwing stones, that is more deployable under the stress. Now, when you do all sorts of complicated moves, will not work. So in 2002, I came across with Krav Maga in Portugal. I used to work at that gym and teaching full contact and other kind of combat skills there. And the police, maritime police, it was a guy who, I mean, like, you have like a terrestrial police, like on the land and on the sea. So that guy was like a sea police officer, came and asked me, do you want to try this? I said, yeah, why not? So after my class, I went to try his stuff, fall in love with it. I said, oh, why? I didn't know that for long, long time ago. I started to train, and in 2007, I went to do my instructor course, and since 2007, I'm teaching Krav Maga. I've been to Israel, I've been to all, I mean, I've been, so my instructor course, first part was in Poland, second part, it was in Sweden. No, first part Sweden, second part Poland, third part Sweden. I've done with my instructor course with what actually the Krav Maga industry called one of the best, with Eyal Yanilov and with his team. Then when I finished, I've been with IKMF, then IKMF split in two. So we have KMG standing for Krav Maga Global and IKMF for International Krav Maga Federation. And then I left them because too much not nice things happened between stuff there. I left, I joined to Krav Maga Corps. There was no difference there. I left them. And then in 2015, I met up Itai Gill. He's a legend. You should have him on a podcast. I can put you in contact with him.
He's a fourth Dan black belt. Is that correct?
No, he's a grandmaster in Krav Maga. He's a ex Yamam Special Forces captain. He left as a captain. He's still active now. I mean, he's a consulting Yamam and Special Forces in Israel.
Which country? Israel.
He's an Israeli, yes.
What was his name? I'm just going to have a quick look because I'm
Itai Gill.
Itai.
Perhaps if you watch the Hell Week on BBC. That ring the bell.
I see. Yeah, I'm just gonna. Yes, I see your picture with him.
Yeah. So in 2015, I took all our instructors there for bespoke training, 6 days. We've been doing a CQB, we've been doing force-in-force drills with SIN munition or FX munition, how you want to call it. Hardcore. He used to say, guys, we train here, no Vaseline, we just go for it. So it was a very good training. And since then, I've been working very closely with him, and even now we're still working with him. I'm going, actually, if everything is okay, I'm going to see him and train with him end of August. And this year, in November, he will run a seminar for my academy here in UK. He's a very humble guy. He will tell you straight away, I don't know if it's working or not. You try it. Might work, might not. It depends on each individual. So keep it simple. No fancy things, because that will take you out of the problem. That's kind of my journey in Krav Maga. And as I mentioned, I'm sticking with simplicity and straightforward, because when they invented Krav Maga, the Krav Maga support, they made it available for civilians to be able to defend themselves. That I'm talking about in 1940-something, when IMI invented this, or put all these styles together, create one. It's been designed for civilians to be able to defend themselves. They've been bullied in the streets of Czech Republic. So since then, more things come in and make it a little bit more complex, more broad, let's put it in this way. And it's a lot of my karma is better than yours and yours is worse than mine, it's irrelevant. You can be a very, I'll say, good fighter. You might die much faster than me. It depends on from where you get hit, who hit you. Are you aware about that? Depends who you face. It's no one is better than anyone. It's sometimes also the luck play a big part on our lives. You need to be on the right place, the right time, and have some luck.
Yes, this is the way, isn't it? Commit. I think commitment is the big word, is it not?
You have to. I mean, you have to commit with to everything. Whatever what you do, if you don't commit, you don't get a good result. That makes sense. I would say when somebody take on anything, I mean, I have some weird questions. Somebody asked me, oh, is this better than Krav Maga? I said, I can't tell you if this is better than Krav Maga. If you come and tell me and you truly believe Zumba is the best defense in the world, who am I to tell you it's not? Because you believe on that. And I mean, I don't want to waste my time to tell you Zumba is a dance and it's for fun and it's for your mental health and well-being. I don't want to waste my time. If you believe Zumba is the best one, that will be the best one. So I'm not onto arguing this is better than this, this is better than that. It's what you believe and what you are after. That's very simple like that. I'm telling my students, you come to this class, we all here humble, we all want to learn to become a better better person. We don't have nothing to prove, we have lots to improve. That's few things what I'm telling them. I learn every day. I learn from my students, I learn from every person that I can learn because it's important. We're still learning, and my father used to tell me, doesn't matter how much you learn, we still die stupid because you didn't learn everything what you could learn. Yeah.
I love that. I've just written it down. Nothing to prove, lots to improve. That is a great mantra for life.
It has to be that way.
Yes. Do you know Eitan Cohen? No, he was this Israeli special forces guy that I met in Israel, and he took me and some guys shooting for the day. But
I guess you had a lot of fun shooting Israeli style.
Yes, it was quite tamed down a bit because it's a place called Caliber 3 that anybody can go there.
Oh, you've been recently?
This was about 12 months ago.
Yes, because now you cannot shoot 9mm. It's a small caliber. They changed the law. Yeah. I know.
Awful.
I know.
Awful.
Especially it is what it is. You know, is that because they've been under the wall lights that terrorists go there and learn how to shoot and they use it to kill people and stuff like that. Well, you can go to learn how to shoot in Poland. You can shoot AK and all sorts of. Mm. And I mean, you can go to Czech Republic and shoot whatever what you want, just money you need. Yeah. But, well, it is what it is. So this is right now, we don't need any of those. Now you all go in and shoot a, what do you call it, a 2-2?
Yeah. I guess for friends listening, it's... they've come down from the regular millimeter, so 5.5, 6 or 9 mil, to what's called a 2-2 conversion. It's a kit you can put inside the breech of your rifle and it converts it down to 2-2. And if you get hit by a 2-2, it's not going to be nice, but it's very unlikely it's going to kill you. And I suppose the thing in with this shooting range in Israel is technically someone could breach it and then just turn around and shoot all the instructors, I'm guessing. But let's get back to Krav Maga. Why did it become so popular? I'm guessing it's worldwide, but obviously in the UK.
Well, worldwide is very, very popular. You'll be surprised that not... I mean, in Israel, it's more popular MMA and like a competition combat sport than Krav Maga. They do it in the military, but a lot of civilians train more this type of combat sports. Now, it's popular because it's straightforward, it's brutal, you don't take any prisoners there, and he's doing the job. But again, it depends on who is teaching and what is teaching. For a good Krav Maga should have a good set of principles, and you have to develop everything around the principles instead of around the, I'll say, problems. So you should have one technique for 7, 8 problems, not 3 solutions for 7 problems. That makes sense. So the simple will be more chances for you to do something about your heart, because you have to think only in one thing. You have to do this. That makes sense. So I'll take, for example, a knife attack. We split it in two, 180 degrees above and 180 degrees below. So you have two techniques. Now the angle doesn't really matter. The difference between stab is blade is close to you, slash blade is far away from you. It's a still circular, very narrow angle. Should I be bothered too much about? It's a knife coming towards you. You might see, I mean, you might see it, you might not. So we don't call it survive. I mean, we don't call it defending a knife. You don't defend a knife. You survive a knife attack. I will be lucky if we can see the weapon on the play. Because if you don't see it, you don't feel the pain. You're just kind of after, if you get 2, 3 stabs and the guy is running and you don't check yourself and you bleed, then you feel yourself tired. And let's put it in this way. In UK, if you call the ambulance and tell them that you've been stabbed, they'll not turn up. The police come first to see if this place is safe, and the ambulance is coming after. And the response of ambulance, UK, maybe 6 minutes. You know that if you get some stabs, you drive very fast. So self-defense have to go hand in hand with first aid, trauma, like a military style. Put a tourniquet, pack the wound. You should know your stuff if you want to survive. Very simple like that. Now, again, it's popular because can be implemented to military units, to police units, SWAT, and everything. I mean, when that is relevant to military or law enforcement, as soon as somebody is jumping and grabbing your weapon, weapon retention, use the weapon as a, as a cold weapon. That makes sense. You don't manage to deploy your handgun. The guy is with a knife on 2 meters. What you do? You still have to deploy your hand-to-hand skills to create some space and time to deploy and move. Again, principles like with the civilians, move out of the line, create distance. If you didn't manage to shoot from the hip, that makes sense. Then use it, move. Perhaps depends on what holster you have, the rules of engagement. Some people, some countries are allowed to have one bullet on a chamber. Some countries don't. And when your life is in danger, you'll be like all over the place. So same with, like, I guess you've done some force in force drills. When you get hit while you get into the rooms, it's not very happy. It's not very, very good. It's changing the way how you enter the room, the way how you slice it and apply more careful tactics than just go there because somebody is shooting some blanks. It's a different story.
Mm. So can we go through, I'm interested to explore the, can I call it like the minimal amount of systems to deal with the maximum amount of threat?
Yeah, no problem. So,
what about if
we have go on.
Yeah, I was just going to say, so like we're in a pub, I've had too much to drink, I think you've upset me, and I just throw the typical punch. What is there one technique to deal with that, or is there more than one?
It's very simple. The way how you show it to me, you want to punch me on the face, like a straight punch, correct?
Now, yeah, if you punch. Have.
No, it's fine. If you have a beef with me, I'll put my hands up. Now, would you punch me on the face?
Not now, no.
Not now, exactly. So I know you'll not punch me on the face because here it's a shield.
Mm.
So you have to go circular, which takes a little bit more time and it's more visible. So do I pose the intention to fight you? Do I pose, do I look aggressive to you?
No,
submissive. Okay, so now the law is on my side. If you start to raise a voice, and I'm going, okay, what you do now? it's a call to fight. I don't stand too much. I don't have too much chances in the front of law. I've been provoking. I'm not provoking. And I'm telling you straight away, if you want to punch me, you have to come with a haymaker, which is now it's your choice. So if you come with a haymaker, I'm just bursting in. We talk about like you acquire the target, you shoot. The bullet travel and make everything for you. Now, that's your bullet. You acquire the target, you are going to hit the target. By the time when you already set this up, target is moving. That means you'll miss it. Me moving forward, I may get a bit whacked here, but my hand is act as a shield. So having two similar motions, same biomechanics, is giving more chance to focus 100% on both of them, which is the same motion. Instead of, for example, blocking and punching, I have two tasks to focus on. Now, one will get more attention than another one. You cannot do two different things with the same focus, the same, efficiency. That makes sense. We cannot, let's say, you can do more than one thing, but one will get more priority. So if you are going to defend yourself, what will be the priority there? Making a good block, perhaps, yes? So that strike will not be as good as the block. Now, moving from here forward straight away, both hands, the same attack, two attacks for now. One will land here, jawline, and one will stop the attack. So you don't defend, you strike against the strike. It's very simple. Doesn't matter if it's a knife, if it's a haymaker, you act the same. Because I don't know at that point, your hand will be low, I couldn't see it while you've been chatting. I couldn't move away because too many people around me. We're talking about in a pub, yes? So we could talk about close quarters. So I have to put my hands up because with the hands down, if you want to headbutt me from very, very close range, or if you want to punch me, till my hands come up, I'll get it because I'll be reactive. Action beat reaction, straightforward by the physical, straight away.
Okay, what about if we're stood facing off and I try to kick you in the nuts?
It's how you present yourself. So if I shift my body to the side, there is no gap for you to kick. Only I need to turn a little bit, one hip in, and there's no gap there. It's your, I would say, body posture, the way how you present yourself. Now, if I have a chance to keep distance, will be at least two steps between me and you. If it's confined area, I will all the time turn to the side, hands on the front, but never static. Never speak with somebody while you still, never. Because we don't have a rear camera. We don't see what's happened here. I want to be in emotion. If we go on a shooting range and somebody, you have a target in emotion, it's hard to hit the target. I'm his target. I have to move. If I move left, right, 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 left, right, left, hard for him to follow. That makes sense. So by the time when he's deciding, I'm going to strike and I move. Oops, it's rewriting his command straight away. I have to do something else. So even if I don't punch or kick, if I move constantly, what I'm doing, I'm becoming proactive. So I'm defending, becoming proactive. That's very simple.
And what position are you, George? What rank or belt do you hold?
So I'm master level one. I achieved this with Itagil. It's endorsed also by the Ministry of Education of Maine State in USA. I'm the chief instructor of Spartans Academy, and also I represent Israeli Security Solutions in UK, which is a. No, it's okay. Which is the Itagil company.
Okay, so what was the Israeli connection, sorry?
So I'm the representative of Israeli Security Solution in UK.
Yeah, okay. That's a security company.
Yeah, it's the Itagil company. He's dealing with all sorts of security, with Kramaga, all sorts. So
now that we've had this chat, This training session, I can tell people for the rest of my life, I've been trained by a Krav Maga master.
No, no. I'll tell you why. If you have time or you have opportunity to come, actually, I will do something else. I will launch an invite. So on 6th of November, I want to see your face to our seminar run by Itagir. How that sounds?
That's a very kind offer. Yes, why not?
So then you can say I've been trained by two masters. I mean, a master and a grandmaster. It's even better.
There we go.
Yeah.
I would teach you the double punch. Do you know the Royal Marines double punch?
No.
There you go.
Wow. That's good. That's coming from karate. I used to do that a long time ago, punching from a little bit above the belt.
Yes.
So I've done Shotokan, I've done Wado Ryu, I've done Taekwondo, Kyokushin, I've done kind of a lot of.
The double punch, you can take out six Taliban.
Yes, if you put three in one line and three in another line. That makes sense?
Perfect. Oh, George, it's been a wonderful chat. Thank you so much. So,
I thank you for inviting me, Chris.
oh, no, absolutely my pleasure. But I want you to promote everything that you can now before we say goodbye. So, which part of the country is your academy? And if people want, is it online or is it a dojo or how is
So,
it?
Spartans Academy of Krav Maga, we have classes in Sheffield, Leeds, Harrogate, Hull, Durham, York, Newcastle.
Okay.
We also teach kids. We also work with corporates. We also work with charities. We help them as much as we can. We have online platform. We have one school in Romania. We work very closely with a few schools in Greece. So that's kind of what we do. We also have let's say an umbrella organization which is called Krav Maga United Kingdom, where people can join and they can come and ask for help. We'll help them. We'll guide them if they need. So we are trying to help everyone. I think that's at least what we can do.
I think you're doing a great job, mate.
Oh, thank you very much.
You've got a good energy, and it looks very professional,
We're always very excited to help our students. And you know what's my satisfaction from this class? When a story from a student came back to us saying, "Oh, this helped me so much and so much," or "I've done exactly what you say and worked," or have so many people coming back to me and saying that, "Thank you, you saved my life." And one of the guys is a Polish guy. He worked as a on a security industry. "Coach, you saved my life." "No, I wasn't there, man. You saved your own life." No, but I've done everything what you say." "Exactly. I give you the knowledge. And I mean, you have the fire. Only what have to be done, just lighting the fire. That's all. It's all on you. So you've been listened, you've been training hard, you apply the knowledge. So I'm proud of you. You saved your own life. I wasn't there. Now, even if I'll be there, I might not be able to save your life because it still depends on you. I might have the same problem. I might be doing something different. But that's the beauty of our teaching. We don't force people to do exactly what I'm doing because we are different. Well, but we tell you, look, this is and this and this. Now, see what suits you based on your capabilities, based on your disabilities, because that's part of your awareness. You should be aware of what you can do, what you cannot. Don't try something stupid because it will not work. That makes sense. Work it out and make it better. So that's how we, this is what we tell our students and how we encourage them to train.
This is why you're a master.
Well, it's just a name. The knowledge is here. A piece of paper or a belt will not fight for me. They'll not go to teaching in my behalf. It's just a title. I'm happy with it's a recognition, but I'm more happy that I can learn from everyone and improve day by day because life and society change. What applied 2 years ago might not apply today. And the society is going more violent So everyone needs to know how to look after themselves. Anything that they believe on and can be useful, do something.
Very true. George, what we will do is put all your links below the below this conversation. So if anybody wants to come and get involved, and I strongly suggest you do, this just sounds like a great opportunity if you're in these locations. So George, we'll put the links below. If you can just stay on the Zoom chat so I can thank you properly when I hit the record button off.
Yeah.
But massive thank you again.
Thank you very much for having me.
Yes, just
and it was a very, very good chat. We can chat a bit after.
Yes, definitely.
There'll be no recorded.
Yes. Thank you, George. And to our friends at home, massive love to you all. Please look after yourselves. If you could hit the like and subscribe button, that's going to help us. And we will see you next time. Friends, thank you for listening to the Bought the T-Shirt podcast. Please like, subscribe and share. And don't forget to follow me on social media. Username, Chris Thrall. Instagram, Chris.Thrall. Thank you.